The following program may contain material that is unsuitable for some audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Aftermath Radio should not be considered a substitute for services provided by a licensed mental health professional. Good afternoon and welcome to Aftermath Radio, brought to you live from the K-Beach radio station at Cal State Long Beach.
Let's see if I remember how to do this.
That was me.
That was great.
What was that exactly? What piece of equipment, important piece of equipment did we break just now? Oh, that was your ring? Oh, my gosh. Holy cow. All right, Aftermath Radio, welcome. Dr. Robert Shug, assistant professor of, what do I do again? Criminal justice. It's tough, man. It's summer vacation. Assistant professor of criminal justice and forensic psychology here at California State University, Long Beach. We are glad to be back. We're having a series of unfortunate technical dilemmas in here, but I think we'll be able to get through okay. Welcome, everybody. It's good to be back. I do want to say, I don't want to brag, and I'm going to check in with each of you, but June in Long Beach, I mean, come on. Was it nice out today?
You only have to come, like, how many times a week? We live
once.
Here. Well, I live here.
You see, you're lucky. This is better than Anaheim weather.
Yeah. Why? Well, how's Anaheim?
It's June
hotter.
Gloom.
Oh, June gloom?
What?
Yeah, well,
it's contradictory data I'm getting here. You just...
I came here and I thought it was going to be as hot as it was in Anaheim, but it wasn't. It was nicer.
Yeah, it's beautiful, beautiful here. I don't know how it is across the west of the rest of the country, but we're very fortunate. We are back for one of our summertime episodes of Aftermath Radio. We're glad to be here. If you'd like to call in, it's not my job to read these, is it?
It's Gigi's job.
That's actually not the right form. This would be the right form.
All right, if you want to call in, you can call us at 562-912-3541, Skype us at aftermath.radio, or email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com.
And as always, if you want to check our website, what is that address?
Aftermathradio.org.
Great. Thank you, Gigi Barron. How are you doing, by the way?
I'm great.
Anything fantastic happened to you over the previous couple weeks of spring or summer vacation?
Just working full time, working and grinding.
All three of you look very relaxed. So whatever.
We don't have school.
No. It's amazing, huh? No. Chantal Fahmy, how about you?
I'm probably better than you've ever seen me because I'm not in school right now.
Ever since you've all decided to drop out of school, your lives are taking a turn for the positive. Excellent. Brian Frederick, how are you?
I'm all right. I'm actually working full-time, but for school. So, yeah.
Shaky
in the cave over in downtown.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, someone's got to do it, right?
Yeah. That might as well be me.
Okay. We actually, oddly enough, we have a lot to hopefully get to today. We're doing something a little bit different. We're doing the first ever premiere version of Aftermath Radio Open Line. Do we have the music for that? I worked very hard on this music this weekend, by the way.
We do.
Okay.
That's the first time we heard it.
That's right. Anyone and everyone, we're inviting you to call in to the numbers, 562-912-3541, or Skype us at aftermath.radio with questions, with comments, anything to do with psychopathy. It's an open forum. It's all for you today. And that's mainly because of none of the experts were available to come on the show today because everyone else is doing like summer vacation type stuff. So there you go. Anyway, I wanted to open the show. It's been a few weeks since we've been here. I was in Montreal for the Society for the Scientific Study of Psychopathy conference. This conference meets every 2 years, and it's basically all the researchers from around the world kind of get together in one place, and we talk about research for a couple of days. This was back in May 19th through 21st in Montreal. And it was really cool. I just wanted to tell you guys just very briefly some of the people I saw. I hung out with Dave Cawson, and I met Paul. I had never met Paul before, even though I talked to him every week on the phone, right? Fantastically nice guy. I mean, just totally sweet guy. Very smart. And I met with Leanne, too. Leanne Leadham. Really funny. And, of course, Dave's got this wicked sense of humor. You wouldn't know it, I mean, because he has the brain of a supercomputer, right? But he's actually a very funny guy. And trivia question. Okay, trivia question. Of the three what will we call them, regular guests here on the Aftermath Radio Show, who brews their own beer?
Fabio.
I was going to say that.
We have one vote for Paul.
Two
votes for Paul.
I know it's not Leanne.
It's actually Dave.
Oh,
Dave brews his own beer.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I want the recipe.
Yeah, maybe you don't. We haven't tasted. Maybe he'll send some to the show. That would be nice. Dave, if you're listening. All right. I got to hang out with Bob Hare, which was really cool.
Had you not met him before?
What's that?
Had you not met him before?
It's funny. My relationship with him, I've probably met him half dozen times. He never remembers me because he meets like thousands of people a year. He actually trained me on the psychopathy checklist.
Sounds like the doctor I work with every day.
Yeah. But it was interesting because he finally had this moment of clarity. He's like, oh, my God, you're Robert. You know, because
maybe
of the
finally clicked.
I think it did. You know how sometimes you have to meet people several dozen times before they remember you. So he's going to come on the show in the fall. That was very exciting. I saw my my PhD advisor Adrian Rain, which is always good to see him. He's like a father to me. And I saw what I would call my academic sister. This is Andrea Glenn, Dr. Andrea Glenn now, who did her PhD at USC the same time I did. She was there. She lives in Singapore now. Listens to the show. Has the podcast on her iPod.
Wow.
How do you like me now? And I did actually have about a handful of people come up to me and say, hey, people I didn't know say, oh, you know, I really like the show. I mean, you guys are doing great work. Keep it up. A couple of people that wanted to come on, you know, so we might sort of broaden our stable of experts coming
That's
in.
Awesome.
Yeah, coming into the fall. We actually have a phone call right now, but that might be something we already have previously arranged. So was going to go to Brian, but he's on the phone right now. Anything else you guys wanted to add?
How's your summer? Do you have one?
Is your mic on?
Yeah.
Is my mic on?
Oh, there you are. So you have to talk into the mic.
Sorry.
I've been working. I mean, I've got the book I've been working on, so that takes a lot of my time. I'm like half talking and half listening to what Brian's saying right now. Can you tell? So the thing with professors is during the summer you sort of get to all the stuff that you couldn't get to during the year. So that's what I'm doing right now. Although
very
I'm
excited.
I
signed up for free summers.
Free summers. What's
I mean,
that?
I was hoping that my career would end up. I had 3 months off every year, but now that's terrible.
Yeah, who sold you that?
What are we talking about?
We're just sort of talking about what I'm doing in my summer.
Oh.
Yeah. Was that an interesting phone call you had?
Yeah, we actually have a phone call. It's an open line.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Is it an open line or is it a prearranged?
I can't believe you just said that.
Did I say that in the air? It was totally open line then, right?
it's open line.
Okay, one thing I do want to do, though, we're going to get to this later. We did get a voicemail. I was wondering if we could play the voicemail now.
Yeah.
And then we're going to get to this in the last part of the show. But this is an Aftermath Radio Q&A. Wink, wink.
Hi, it's Jane from Wiltshire, and I'm thinking about the last episode of Aftermath Radio when you interviewed this gentleman who is psychopathic. Yeah, slightly thinking about that bit when he said he had a bit of a personal history of being suicidal during his childhood. And I'm wondering about charitable organizations within the third sector, because in England, the country that I'm from, and presumably in North America, there should be various bereavement charities and suicide-related charities. Like, I know that just before the Christmas holidays, there are centres in England that are specifically for people who have these issues and who are really suicidal, and those centres are there. They're set up to cater for these people's needs. And basically, I'm just wanting to ask, because within the kind of the population of suicidal people, there's a category of suicidal people, and this category is basically psychopathic suicidal people. So I'm wanting to ask, if possible, that is this group, you know, within the suicidal population, being recognized by British charities, by North American charities, by charities in various other countries, such as maybe France, Germany, Austria, Canada, and, you know, is this group being distinguished from perhaps numerous other groups of suicidal people? And if not, what needs to be done in the system? And how is it going to change the system? So, yeah, okay. Bye for now.
Good. I think that's a really good question, and I want to get into the relationship between psychopathy and suicidality again at the end of the show. But we sent our crack Aftermath Radio research team out on the street to find the answers.
Right?
So we're going to get to that in a little bit. I think maybe right now we take a break, and then we'll come to this caller.
Sounds
and Gigi's
right.
Pointing. What's up?
Nothing.
No? I can hear you even when you whisper. All right, Aftermath Radio, we'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
Bob!
Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shug Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
Aftermath Radio.
Aftermath Radio.
Welcome back, Aftermath Radio. Dr. Robert Shug, Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology, on our special open line summer edition of Aftermath Radio. We have on the line right now Grace, I believe.
Yes, it's Grace. Hi.
Hey there, Grace. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good today. How are you?
I'm just fine, thank you. And thank you for holding.
No problem.
And just to let everyone know, Grace and I have communicated a little bit over the past week or so. So I'm familiar with bits of your story anyway. And basically, I invited you to come on to talk about that. So you've been in a relationship with someone you believe to be a psychopathic individual.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Can you go ahead and tell us about that?
Well, I met him probably about 7 years ago now, and I met him at a time when, now looking back, I didn't realize it then, but I think I was pretty needy in my life. I was getting older, and I was a burnt-out corporate-type person, executive traveling around and just in a burnout-level job, making a lot of money, but I was really empty, and, you know, it was like I wanted the family. I wanted a chance to have another child. My older child was already out of the house. And, you know, and I ended up meeting this really attractive, did I say attractive?
You did. And you said it like you really mean it, too.
Yeah, beautiful blue eyes. Did you ever hear the song by The Who, Behind Blue Eyes?
Right.
There was something behind those eyes that I didn't quite see. It took me a little while.
You know, not to derail the conversation, but the lyrics of that song really talk about a person who has psychopathic features. I don't know if... You young kids in here, have you ever heard of the band The Who?
Heard of them, but don't know that song. The theme song
Behind
CSI,
Blue Eyes,
I think, is by The Who, right? Mm-hmm. That's all I know.
All right. Anyway, I'm sorry, Grace. Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. I heard the song, and I've always been a Who fan, and I heard the song in a completely different way about a year ago and thought, oh, my gosh. But anyway, so I met this man. He was a professional. He was at the doctorate level, and... we met and we, you know, started dating. It seemed at first to be slow, but it speeded up into, you know, like somebody kicked in the turbo boost. And by the time that we were together for 5 months, he put to me was a massive engagement ring out on my finger.
Wow.
Wanted to start a family. And the interesting thing is, I remember the first night that we were together on the beach and we had this romantic kiss, and it was just like, I swear to God, I skipped all the way up my driveway saying, it's my turn, you know? And anyway, I remember feeling sorry for him. And that was because he was married before and his wife did not want to have children. That's what he told me, and I thought, this poor man, you know, and how dare somebody do that to him?
Sure.
And anyway, I think what happened was is that he sensed as if I had a sign on my forehead that, you know, I wanted a child and a family. So he just jumped on that. And I think that's my part in this. I was blind because of my own needs. And he's very, very intelligent. So you could figure me out pretty quickly.
Grace, had you put that out there for him, that you were interested in a family and kids?
This is so embarrassing. I know that a friend of mine told me that a male friend who he was attracted to me, he told me that you were walking around practically with a sign that you wanted, you know, you wanted a family. So I can only assume that if my friend got the vibe and he was so gracious to tell me that later, I can only imagine who now is my daughter's father knew that I wanted a child.
Right.
Early in the relationship, he figured that out because I remember driving around. When you hear someone that's needy or however I'm making myself sound, I mean, I had a six-figure income. And I was very successful. You know, I went to college, graduated with, summa cum laude, blah, 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 blah. But I think when your heart is empty, no matter how well you have it together, you're vulnerable to someone like that.
Right. Hey, Grace, are you moving around a lot? Because it sounds like you're sticking your head in and out of a tunnel or something like that.
Sorry.
Is that what's happening?
I've felt that way before.
Right. Okay, so it sounds like it was off to a great start. So what happened next?
What happened next was he proposed to me, and a wonderful romantic proposal, and you know, with the beach as the backdrop, and I said yes. And then, you know, within a couple weeks, I was pregnant. And the next thing that happened was there were some red flags coming up, and we were supposed to get married. He moved in with me. We were supposed to get married, and I put it off because a friend of mine told me, you know, just to hang in there and wait. She didn't let on what was going on until after I had the baby. Because she didn't want to upset me. But what she had found out is that he had other names.
Oh.
So to make a long story a little bit shorter, he had a completely hidden life. I'm pretty ethical and, you know, I try to do the right thing. And, I'm the type of person that wears my heart on my sleeve, kind of, and want to, you know. And so he played me on that because he had all this background. He was involved with various hate groups. That if I had any clue, I would have ran. He disavowed his social security number. He stopped paying taxes. All of this stuff was like, oh, my God. And then he was claiming to be a minister, and he had a church, and I found all of these papers that, at the same date range, he was lying to different government offices, telling them, oh, this guy lives here, he lives there, he lives somewhere else, all at the same time frame, and he was living with me. So,
when did you start seeing all these red flags? I mean, these are very significant events,
yeah,
I think.
Sure. Well, I saw little ones in the frustration of trying to communicate with him and just a little concern. For example, one time we were shopping, and a shirt fell off the rack, mm-hmm. which sounds minor, but, you know, I would be the one that would, you know, bend down, maybe put it back or whatever. And he just kicked it under the thing.
Mm.
And he had a lot of callous-type behaviors, and it just didn't fit. And then he started to get controlling, like, I wanted to have a dog. And for no reason at all, it was just he had to control that in me. Now, these are the minor things that doesn't tell me he's a psychopath, obviously.
Right. They're each in and of themselves one data point. But when you start to put them all together, it creates a picture, doesn't it?
Yes, it sure does.
And I've always – that's an interesting point that you brought up. I mean, the shirt that falls off the clothing rack and that he kicks under the clothing rack, you know, there might be a number of explanations for that. But I always tell my students to pay attention to the way – you know, and this typically involves people that they're beginning to date, you know, or whatever, have some sort of relationship with, pay attention to the way they treat other people, particularly people that they don't necessarily need to be nice to, you know, like waiters and busboys in restaurants, you know. How does this potential partner treat those people? That's when you really see what they're made of, what their character is. And I think that's what you saw in this circumstance. This was a guy who could have very easily bent down and picked the shirt up and hung it up, but he chose to kick it under.
At least walk by it, not kick it, and make it worse. You
right. Know, put his big old dirty footprint on it.
Yeah, like he's at the doctorate level, and he's supposed to be professional and a grown man in his, you know, almost 50 range. To do something like that was almost childish.
Did you call him out on that? Did you say anything?
I probably did. I don't remember now because so many other things happened that were much worse than that.
Right.
That was just a little hint. And then, you know, other things just didn't add up. When I would talk to him, I would ask him a question, and I felt like I was just going around and around. Like I never got to the bottom of something.
Mm-hmm.
And I would stop frustrated, and then I wouldn't even bother.
Yeah.
You know? And so the relationship itself was stressed. But
right. Okay, let me move you forward a little bit then. So then you have a child together.
We have a child.
Okay. So tell me about how things progressed then, like and more toward how they are now.
Okay, so after we had the baby, if you ever want to know someone, you know, if they have secrets, you find out after that. You should find them out before, but if somebody is hiding them on you, it's hard to see it. But he started doing all kinds of bizarre things.
Hey, Grace, let me interrupt you. Can you move again? It sounds like you're a little bit distorted.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that better?
A little bit.
Okay. So a lot of weird stuff came up, and, you know, he didn't want to have a regular doctor involved with today. He had this paranoid approach to life that everybody was out for something. And I think,
you know what, Grace, could you take a couple steps to the side or something? You're fading out again.
Oh, I'm sure.
That perfect. Just don't move from wherever you're at right now. It sounds great.
Okay, cool.
Play statue. So you said
sorry about that.
Whatever you do, don't move. No. So he was acting sort of paranoid, it sounds like.
Yeah, everything. It's like there is like he's like deviant in everything. He has to go the opposite direction of norm. Like I don't even know how to explain it. Like he doesn't believe in the Social Security number.
Wow.
He thinks the government's illegitimate. When I found out when the bomb fell, so to speak, I hate to use that term, but I found out I connected him based on a medallion he had on his article of clothing. I connected him to a paramilitary group that's the same organization that Timothy McVeigh was associated with.
Okay.
So now if you look at someone like me who's la, 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 trying to bring homeless people to my, you know, house to feed them, and I, someone like that was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know? But, and then, you know, there wasn't a lot of abuse during the relationship, just weird stuff that would get on my nerves really bad.
Sure.
But once he found out I was on to him, then all hell broke loose, pardon my mouth. But
well, Grace, we have a couple minutes left. Can you just give everyone a sense of what your life is like now, the situation with him?
I can do really quick bend to... been through this horrible custody case, probably 60 hearings, 4 different trials, another trial pending, 1 dismissed, 3 full 7:30 child custody evaluations, lost my house, which was mine before he moved in,
wow.
Lost everything. And now I'm just holding on, trying to do day by day with my little baby, and just try to help her along and give her the support she needs, and then try to support myself. I ended up diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah.
And by a neutral doctor, so it wasn't, you know, some people make up stuff to get
leverage in custody cases.
Sure. What, just in sort of the closing few moments we have here, what sort of advice do you think you would have for other folks out there who might be going through something similar?
Well, if they're going through a custody battle with someone with high psychopathic traits, the first thing I would say is surround yourself with a support system that loves you and knows you, because psychopaths will, if with high traits, they usually come out fighting, saying that you have a mental illness, and it's horrible. So you need a support system, and when one person burns out, go to the next person. Mm-hmm. You know, go where the love is. Don't stay in the hole. You need to surround yourself with a strong professional team, an attorney, therapist that knows what's going on.
Right.
Because it's real easy for you to look crazy.
Sure. Well, I'm thinking maybe we can have you back on again in the future, and you can tell us a little bit more about your experiences with the family court then, because I think a lot of people would benefit from that.
Absolutely.
Does that
I'd
sound
love
good?
To.
Okay. We're going to have to let you go then, Grace, but
okay.
We appreciate you calling.
Okay. Thanks so much.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, Aftermath Radio, we'll be back right after this.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
Bob!
Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shugg Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
Welcome back, Aftermath Radio. Dr. Robert Shugg, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology here at Long Beach State. We have on the line Joyce.
Hi, how are you, Robert?
Good, Joyce. How are you doing? Now, Joyce, did we out you with your last name already, or should I keep that on the down low?
Okay, it's Alexander.
You just outed yourself, didn't you?
Yeah, think of it as Alexander the Great.
Ah, yes, we will, and you are. Now, you've been on the show before. I think it was a couple months ago.
Uh-huh.
How have you been since?
Oh, I have been wonderful. Doing a little bit of work on my next parole hearing for my son, which comes up in 2 years.
Right.
Looking for some research. And things that I can put into the parole package that will suit to the parole board to show them that, hey, he's been diagnosed by your people
right.
as an antisocial personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what it is, and you don't want to let this guy out. He's going to continue to be violent.
Right. Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that in a minute. Let me just, if you could you catch everybody back up again as to your situation? Maybe not
okay.
as in detailed as last time,
okay.
but let us know what happened.
Real quick, I have a son who's 40 years old now. He's in prison for murder. He's been in prison for 20 years. He came up for parole recently, and I hired the best parole attorney in Texas to fight his parole because he... even from his parole, from his prison cell, he sent one of his buddies to kill me in order to get an inheritance. And I managed to not be killed and get proof of this, and the guy went to jail. And my attorney got a 3-year set off for my son in January. So it's 2.5 years now before he goes back up to the parole board. He murdered a 17-year-old girl in 1992 because she had turned him into the cops for some illegal stuff that they were doing, and he was on parole at that time and would have gone back to prison. So he's very violent. He's extremely intelligent. He has continued his psychopathic career in prison by breaking prison rules and committing other felonies, which they haven't prosecuted him for, but they threw him in solitary for. So I'm working on coming up with another presentation, and I actually sent you a copy of the presentation that I had sent to the parole board with his medical records records and with the things showing that he's a psychopath and
it's only,
that he
it's
has no remorse.
It's only about 500 pages long, too, right?
Yeah, about 100 pages long. And you know, with letters that he had smuggled out, and actually with pictures that he had emailed out from a smuggled-in cell phone mm-hmm. that he had
yeah.
From his prison, which is, you know, it's a felony, it's a big bad thing. And but you know, I'm trying to make the parole board see that he needs to stay in prison.
Right.
I think right now and get. You know, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think it's only about in Arkansas, and Arkansas does not send people back for violations that are technical of the parole. They only send them back for new crimes. And still, only 40% of the convicts in Arkansas don't finish out their parole and don't go back to prison for a new crime. So,
right. I don't know for sure, but that doesn't surprise me if that's how it is. I did want to ask you, though, two things. Though. I didn't know if you wanted to get into the work you've been doing with Love Fraud. Maybe we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
But just sort of, I think this is a really interesting angle. I just sort of thought of, you know, you're putting a lot of effort into these parole hearings, aren't you?
Yes, I'm putting a great deal of effort and money.
Yes. Could you tell, maybe we could talk about that for a few minutes, just maybe what's involved in that? You know, I don't know that people often think of this, you know, when they have psychopathic relatives locked up who are coming out and you're literally in fear for your life. I mean, and some people might listen to you and say, wow, this woman might be crazy, but this is all documented stuff.
And this, yeah, and the system wants you as a parent, wants you as a wife to take these people back into your home. Now, Keith Keels, I think it's Keith Keel, isn't that his name?
Kent.
Does the prison
Kent.
Research?
Kent Keel.
Kent. Right. Mm-hmm. He says that 25% of all convicts are score 30 on the PCLR. He says the average score, and I talked to him about this, of all inmates and felonies that have committed a felony is 22. It takes a 30 to qualify out of a possible 40 to be a psychopath,
right?
A full card-carrying Ted Bundy psychopath.
Right.
But the average inmate is a 22. He may not be legally a psychopath, but he's not somebody you want to take home.
Sure. And what we often talk about on the show is that magic number of 30 on the psychopathy checklist, which is the instrument we use to measure psychopathy. It's not an either-or thing. It's not like having a cold or not having a cold.
Yeah.
It's a continuous thing. And folks that are 21, 22, 23, and this goes from 0 to 40, by the way, with 40 being the highest score, those folks are very capable of doing some very bad things and are certainly considered psychopathic in the sense they're on this continuum. And so,
well, exactly. And, you know, a chihuahua or a beagle is a canine, and so is a wolf. And so,
I don't know where you're going with this, but I agree.
And then you've got the guy in the middle that's kind of the pit bull. And, well, maybe some pit bulls aren't going to kill you, but maybe some of them will.
Right.
So do you want to take home this pit bull and that's been in prison and let it play with your child?
Right. Now, Joyce, why does the system, maybe you can speak to this, why does the system want to reunite, so to speak, the offender with the family?
Okay. One reason is money. Because they don't want to have to put this guy up in a halfway house. It costs money.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they send him home with you, you're going to house him, you're going to feed him, you're going to provide him transportation, and they don't have to worry about that.
Right.
And they can twist statistics and show that a person who has a family support network has a better chance of not going back to prison. Okay, that may be true, but you can skew statistics in such a way that you can prove anything by statistics.
Right.
I can take statistics and prove that a man with one foot on a red-hot stove and the other one on an ice cube is, on average, comfortable.
That's good. I like that.
So, you know, statistics don't mean anything.
It's called lying with statistics, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so the state wants you to take financial responsibility for this guy.
Right.
Because chances are, if the family doesn't take responsibility for him, he's going to come out of there with the clothes he's wearing and nothing else.
Now, how many times has he been up for parole? Or is this the first time?
He's been up twice in this incarceration. Now, he was on parole in 1992 when he killed this girl.
Mm-hmm.
And they arrested him. And do you remember this barefoot bandit guy? And he was just recently sentenced in federal court. You know, the kid that was stealing the airplanes and flying to Jamaica or the Bahamas.
I think I did hear about that. Yeah.
Colton Moore. Okay. He reminds me a whole bunch of my son.
Mm-hmm.
And just absolutely no fear. And my son has no fear. And, you know, he sees himself as a success. And he sees himself as the smartest person in the world. And he's pretty dang close. He's in the 99th percentile.
Mm-hmm.
So, but his measurement of success is not the same as yours and mine. Yours and mine is you to be a success. You go to school, you get a degree, you get a job, you perform the job well, you have good relationships. That's not his idea of success. His idea of success is winning at putting one over on the guards,
yeah.
You know, smuggling a cell phone in,
yeah.
Showing this girl that she couldn't get away with turning him into the cops.
Right.
He killed her.
Right, it's a whole different frame of reference for him.
Yeah, a whole different frame of reference.
Well, listen, Joyce, so we got a couple minutes left. Can you just give
Can
you give everyone an idea of what's now involved? I don't know how much you can say or what you can't say, but this hearing coming up, what sort of effort is involved on your part now to prepare for this?
Well, I've got to come up with some research. The parole board has the attention span of a rock, so I've got to do it as concisely and precisely as I can,
right.
But to show that he is a psychopath, and psychopaths are not a good risk to let out,
mm-hmm.
That he did in the past try to kill me, and that there is almost no chance at all that he's going to reform.
Right.
And that I'm also trying to get the victim's family involved. I don't know for sure, but I don't think they showed up at this last hearing. And so I've got to try to see if I can approach them through my lawyer and get them involved. They have a legal right to stand up in front of the parole board. I don't.
Interesting. That's
and
really interesting.
So when I no longer have access to letters. He's not sending me letters or letters to that I have access to tell what trouble he's getting in. So I have to work with information from the past.
And you have an attorney helping you?
Yes, I hired. Now, in Texas, if you want out on parole, you pretty well got to hire a parole attorney. It's the Texas Parole Attorney Full Employment Act. And so I hired the most expensive and the best parole attorney who has 80% success rate,
mm-hmm.
Texas. And guess what? He knows what a psychopath is, and he refuses to work for one.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Well, that's...
Can you believe that?
I think that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, it's a good thing. It's absolutely a good thing.
Well, listen, Joyce, we got about a minute left. Did you want to... and it's a fascinating story, and we're certainly going to hear more about it, I hope, you know, in the coming months. Is this something that's coming soon, or can you say when it is, or...
He's not coming back up for parole for another 2 years.
Oh, okay. So you're just preparing a couple years in advance. That's probably smart.
Know, I've got to work on this because,
you, sure do.
You know, I can't wait till, you know, the last minute and try to come up with something.
Right, right. Did you, Joyce, did you want to say anything about Love Fraud or?
Oh, well, Love Fraud is great.
Uh-huh.
I've got articles on there. It's got articles on there, and I think Love Fraud is probably one of the better sources of information in how to cope and how to heal, because psychopaths don't just wound you, and people don't understand. It's, well, you know, he's your son. You can't give up on him.
Right.
Or, you know, she's your mother. You have to make up with her.
Right.
And, you know, people don't understand. It's not a case of, well, just get over it. You know, you've both people before, or you've had problems with people before. It's a whole lot more than just a normal quarrel or can't get along with somebody.
Right. So you have articles on love fraud right now. And that's is it lovefraud.com? Yeah. Is that what it is?
Yeah, lovefraud.com.
Okay.
And I've got quite a few articles on there. And Leanne has got a bunch of really good articles on there.
Yeah.
And there's links to several really good survivor sites there, as well as Leanne's site about raising the at-risk child,
right.
The child of a psychopath.
Right. All right, Joyce, we're going to have to let you go. We really appreciate you coming on with us.
Well, I enjoy your program, and thanks for taking my call.
No problem at all. I'll stay in touch with you about the things we were discussing related to your case.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, Joyce.
Bye-bye.
Aftermath Radio, we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
Bob!
Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shug Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
I guess Brian's taking us back. Okay, Aftermath Radio, Dr. Robert Shug. Now, actually, we've had some late-breaking developments here.
I'm so sorry, man. I thought you heard me tone. Never mind.
Sure, yeah, right. Yeah, okay, yeah. So beginning of the show, we had a question about the relationship between psychopathy and suicidality. This was a voicemail question. And I often tell students about how the original criteria for psychopathy, Hervey Cleckley did state that one of the things he saw in his patients was, he called it suicide rarely carried out, which would sort of suggest someone who might state that they're suicidal, that they're going to commit suicide, but it's not so much that they have an overwhelming desire to die, but it's more of an attention-seeking mechanism or perhaps a manipulation. Now, G, do you want to set this up really quick, who you got a hold of and how this happened to you?
His name is Reese Butler, and he's the CEO of Hope Line, mm-hmm. with also the Kristen Brooks Hope Center. They were the founders of 1-800-SUICIDE, and I talked to him briefly earlier, and mm-hmm. he's really helpful, and he's, you know, kind enough to get on the air right now, so we can just go and talk to him.
Okay, great. So we have Reese Butler on the line then. Reese, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Now, I imagine that Gigi gave you some background as far as why we were calling you and some of the information we were looking for. And basically, we had a question about, psychopaths and do they call suicide hotlines and what do you do with them? And we thought that, you know, someone like you would really know a lot about this. What can you tell us? Do you in your hotline take into consideration that a psychopath might be calling in just to manipulate you?
Absolutely. But at the same token, as I told her earlier, that we treat everyone as if they are just as at much at risk of suicide as someone who is basically stating that they are when their intention is not to attempt suicide.
Right.
In other words, we err on the side of assuming they are suicidal, even if they're not.
And that makes a lot of sense. Do you ever get the same person calling over and over and over again?
We've seen it all. I mean, we've had, believe it or not, one young woman call 250 times in the span literally of an hour, which is, it's hard to imagine that one can even dial that fast, make the connection, hang up, dial again, make the connection, hang up.
Almost seems physically impossible.
When we reached back out to her house, her father denied that she called the hotline at all.
Right.
And obviously, this is a serious problem, and we see this type of situation quite often. People that are obsessive compulsive. And one thing I really want to state is that while we see in young people 5, 6, 7, 8,000 suicides per year on average in America,
we see over 600,000 hospitalizations that are so severe of a suicide attempt that we're talking upwards of $40,000 worth of health care that needs to be administered for each of these attempts.
I had
these
no
are
idea.
Not people crying out for help necessarily. And by the way, some of them are.
Right.
Many young people have died by suicide trying to reach out for help and crying for help and not meaning to kill themselves, where they took an overdose of Tylenol or they took an overdose of a particular over-the-counter medication, not wanting to die but wanting to get help, wanting to get attention, crying out for help. So to us, it doesn't much matter if it's crying out for help or it's a serious attempt to end one's life.
And I understand, and that makes perfect sense to me, that you have to treat every call as if it was the call. I understand that. Do you get a sense of how many folks call in who perhaps really don't want to die and are really more crying for help or maybe even are manipulating the system?
But historically speaking, in the studies that have been done on our network, upwards of 60% of all the people call our hotline are in what we call a state of crisis. And if you're in a state of crisis, then anything can happen in that state.
Right.
So the other 40% can fall in between third-party calls, trying to find help for loved ones, people crying out for help, pinging the system, just looking for who is out there, who is available to help. To get to is this a psychopath or a sociopath? We never get to that state in terms of evaluation. What we do up front is do a risk assessment and make sure that the person is not at risk of harming themselves or others in the immediate moment. And if they're not, then what we do is try to move them off to direct services in their local area, hook them up with support groups, therapy, whatever it is that their situation is calling for.
Sure. Now, Reese, actually, I'm sort of reading an email that Gigi forwarded me. You actually also mentioned another interesting issue that I didn't even think of. I'm talking about folks that are psychopaths and sociopaths who end up working the hotlines. Can you speak
sure.
to that a little bit?
Well, yeah. Well, the most famous crisis hotline worker in history is Ted Bundy, who worked for one of our hotlines up in Seattle and was considered by his peers a very empathetic, very caring, very effective crisis line worker. So a sociopath is just that. They're able to lie, deceive, and take on the persona of a helper as much as any other personality they want to take on.
Right.
So it's difficult. In our line of work, it's very difficult to screen out those who themselves are at risk of harming themselves, who are healthy, stable, able to help others. It used to be historically we would screen out anyone who lost a loved one to suicide because of the simple fact that survivors are 9 times more likely to die by suicide themselves, and they're probably not the most appropriate helper. At least that's the way we used to look at it. Now we look at it as, wow, they could be a peer counselor. If they've gotten the help and the therapy and they are in a stable place and they've got good quality supervision, then why not? These are the most effective sometimes people to say, look, I've been there standing at the abyss wanting to end my life. I've been where you are. I have survived, and here's how I did it. And while that may not work for you, at least it proves there's hope.
Right. That's great information then, Reese. We got to go, though, but I did want to ask, did you want to plug the website, or is there a way people can get a hold of you if they're in need of this kind of service?
Sure. I mean, if you need the service, obviously 1-800-SUICIDE is the hotline to call, 784-2433, 784-2433. We are in desperate need of volunteers. So anyone who wants to do this kind of work, we are right now recruiting over 1,000 new volunteers. We have online training. People can actually take the courses online, get certified online. And now we have the world's first virtual crisis center in imalive.org. And you can actually take chats, emails, texts, phone calls via the Internet
And that's what we need the volunteers for. So if you, anybody in your listening audience wants to become a support counselor, become certified as an online suicide counselor and intervention specialist, we have a 40-hour course, which could be done probably 20 to 25 hours if you're really sharp and bright. And we'd love to have you as a volunteer. So just go to imalive.org, I-M-A-L-I-V-E.org, and fill out an online volunteer app. And we'd love to hear from you.
Great. Okay, Reese, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Right. Bye-bye. That was Reese Butler, President and CEO of Hopeline. So I guess I think that kind of gets to the question, at least in terms of how the Suicide Hotline folks handle psychopaths. And it sounds like there's really no way for sure to, I mean, they have to treat every call like it's the call that's, you know, really important. But it does sound like it's an issue. It was really interesting about the Ted Bundy aspect. I had no idea about that.
That's a trip.
I didn't either.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so we need to start wrapping up, huh?
Yeah, you've got about 3 minutes left.
Okay.
Do I sound like super chill right now or what? I'm just like, yeah, go ahead.
Well, we decided we're going to do one show a month, right? What was our next one? Did we decide yet?
Our next one's next week, isn't it?
Well, I wanted to talk about that. Thanks for stealing my thunder.
July 18th is the one coming up next,
okay,
for sure.
And we'll certainly post that on the website. Now, we had a thing come up here where, I don't know if I should mention this on the air or not. No?
Why
okay.
Not?
Okay, I met a documentary film crew in Montreal, and they're going to come in and film the show. So it was supposed to be today, but it got postponed until next week. So we're thinking of doing another show next week. It'll be probably an open line show.
See, the guys out in the waiting room there are like,
right, right, they'll be here.
Yeah, guys, right on.
So we encourage you to call in next week then, 562-912-3541, and we'll take all comers. You know, we want to look good for TV. We got the girls in here. They always look good. Brian always looks good, too. So visually, I think we don't have any problems, but we need the content. So we are going to I'm assuming you guys can make it, or you're still checking on it?
Well, I spoke too soon in my email to you the other day. I totally forgot I'm going to be out of town.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we'll be minus one. And then, G, you got to check.
I'm going to try my hardest.
Okay. And then,
how's that for pressure, Ryan?
It might just be me.
Wow.
Well, no. Look, if you guys don't want to be TV stars, that's fine with me. No.
No, I'll be here.
Can you run the board?
No, I can't. I'll have to get one of those guys. Okay. In the meantime, feel free to give us a call and leave us voicemails. Again, 562-912-3541. You can Skype us at aftermath.radio. Email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com. As always, go to our website, aftermathradio.org, and our podcasts are all archived there for your listening enjoyment. So until next week, Dr. Robert Shug for Aftermath Radio. We'll talk to you then.
You've been listening to Aftermath Radio, production of the K Beach Radio Station at California State University, Long Beach. Produced in association with AftermathSurvivingPsychopathy.org. Your host has been Dr. Robert Shug. Your producers have been Brian Frederick, Chantel Fahmy, and Gurjeet Brar. Join us next Monday at 4 p.m. for another exciting episode. If you or someone you know has been victimized and you'd like to talk to someone, call the Cal State Long Beach Counseling and Psychological Services number at 562-985-4001.